Suzanne Rowe on Double J.
This is a huge film. It's been many years in the making. You turn up, you're cast as Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody, the biopic of him and, of course, Queen. It's day one on the set. What is the first scene that you shoot?
The most iconic rock performance of all time, Live Aid. Yeah, who came up with that idea? trial by fire, right? Just baptism.
Throwing you in the deep end.
Yes. But it ended up being one of the best things they could have done because it forged us together as a band, myself and the three other actors playing Queen. And, you know, it's odd. You have Brian May on set, Roger Taylor on set, celebrating, an incredible performance on their end and beginning to tell the story of their best friend and their story as well. And we have to, inhabit those characters on day one in that performance was... It was a heavy way to start, no doubt. But by the end of the week, we were just, we were united and wanted to keep doing it over and over and over. By day six, we got to run the entire concert as one, and the adrenaline that is coursing through your body is like nothing you've ever felt before.
I loved in the film that that whole performance was included. You could have just had one or two songs, but the whole 20-minute set made it into Bohemian Rhapsody. Was it important to include it all?
It is. It is a bit abbreviated. Some of it is cut out, but when you get this later on, I don't know how it's going to come out on DVD or what they do these days, but we are cutting together the entire set right now to make sure that it'll be available, which I think is the coolest thing because we put so much work into that. That's one... 20 minutes, we wanted to emulate move for move, which was the most daunting task because anytime you see a guitar move a certain way, you see Freddie look out towards the audience, it should match up quite well. Now, I don't want to start anybody putting this, setting them aside one by one next to each other on YouTube or something.
But you do nail his mannerisms. I mean, it enables us to completely fall into the character of Freddie Mercury watching you on screen. You do that brilliantly. What did you watch to get it right? If that's the first day on set and you're basically replicating this entire performance, how far back were you actually studying the performances of Freddie Mercury?
I mean, look, when he throws out his arm in Radio Gaga, it's almost a punch, right? He's punching away, and you start to think, where did he get that? Well, he was a boxer as a kid. Mm. When he went to school, a boarding school in India. They learned how to play the piano there. He had a band as a young kid, so he's already pretty prolific on the piano and singing from a very young age. And then, when they cut time on music class, he was out in the boxing ring, trying not to get hit in his big teeth. So you start to put together all of this from his childhood, actually. And influences for him were Jimi Hendrix, and David Bowie. Aretha Franklin. Liza Minnelli. He moves like Liza. So I'd watch Cabaret a lot with a movement teacher. We'd watch that and we'd try to find out what are the similarities. We'd get things on their feet in a big dance studio. Had to put on some ballet tights, which I hadn't done before. She was very strict, young Polly Bennett, with me.
Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
That's wild that you went back, you really peeled back the layers of what influenced him. It wasn't just looking at Freddie, it was looking at that whole family tree of what had gone into making him as a performer.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I could never imitate him. I didn't want to imitate him. I didn't want to mimic him. That's always going to be playing catch up. Mm. What I had to do is to be able to do it as spontaneously as he did. I mean, other than Live Aid, that I still, I have in my body, I could probably go out and do that set right now if I wanted to because we rehearsed it so many times. But all the other concert footage, I wanted to be able to do take for take. I wanted a camera to be not know where I was going to go. And I would tell the cameraman, they'd be like, can we see you on your mark? I go, I don't have a mark. You're just going to have to follow me wherever I go the same way you would have had to do with him.
I want to break free.
What did you learn about Freddie that took you by surprise? You're going deep into the life of this, one of the most iconic musicians of our time.
I don't want to spoil anything for the film, but God, he calls it an upheaval of an upbringing, and you certainly understand why. The kid was, at a very young age, put on a ship from Zanzibar to go to India to go to school at St. Peter's boarding school, where he was away from his family for the formative years of his life. He didn't go to London till his early adult life. So the struggle to identify himself, I think, was so human and something I knew nothing about. His real name, I didn't know. Mm. That he had a relationship with a woman named Mary Austin for so many years who he got engaged to. I had no idea about any of these things. So you see this young man who's very conflicted, and that's why I understand why there's this bold, audacious, outlandish presence who just explodes on stage. Because there's something that was just burning inside of him that he had to get out with a bunch of strangers who we felt very at home with. Oh, somebody, somebody, ooh, somebody.
That sense of family lives very strong throughout this whole biopic. It's a beautiful relationship he has with the other members of Queen. For you, you've obviously played many roles in your life. Most notably, we recognize you as the star of Mr. Robot. But when you're playing any part, any role, do you have to find a part of yourself that you connect to in order to understand the character that you're playing, whether it's a real person or a character in something like Mr. Robot?
Absolutely. I mean, people would often say they're polar opposites, Elliot and Freddie Mercury, but I think there's a deep sense of loneliness in the both of them, and who doesn't have that in their own life? I mean, everybody can understand what it feels like to be lonely. And just, I found that with Freddie, and what was helpful the most was, you know, I view him as a rock god the way everybody else does. He's a deity. He's this monolith. And I thought, what are you doing? This is just insurmountable, dude. Stop. Halt. Don't go any further. But then I looked, I said, approach it the way you would any other character. Here's a guy who's just struggling. He's struggling to find himself. He's an immigrant. I thought, I'm a first-generation American. I can understand that. I can understand what it feels like to be different and feel like a fish out of water and struggling to identify who I am in a place where I feel like I didn't necessarily fit in. I mean, English was for me my second language at 5 years old. So, you know, I had an odd name growing up. He had a very odd name growing up. And then, you know, I never thought I'd be, I don't think my family ever expected me to go into this world. I mean, I'm sitting with you in a recording studio right now talking about playing Freddie Mercury.
Stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
What does it feel like to be Freddie Mercury?
Look, for 6 months I got to walk around calling everyone darling and dear and ending every sentence that way as well. I'm not a method actor, but I swear you don't. When you get to play Freddie Mercury all day, you don't want to interrupt between takes returning to Rami Malek. That's a waste of time as far as I'm concerned. If someone's going to let me be Freddie Mercury and acknowledge that Freddie's on set, hey, I'm going to use that as much as humanly possible. She's a killer
queen, gunpowder jealousy. Double J. Hear it on your mobile, online, on your digital radio or TV.